You're listening to Confronting Christianity, a podcast of Training the Church.
If we're working in good faith, we should be able to see that and get as close as we can to finding a solution, even if we don't completely agree. So expand your reading of history, expand your reading of Christians, because again, I think we're framing our understanding of Christianity around a very flawed version of Christianity. Why would you leave the faith and center the people that were doing the faith wrong? And I think it goes back to that question of, can you distinguish the culture from the faith?
This is Kyle Worley, and I'm joined by my co-host, Rebecca McLaughlin. And today, we're also joined by Justin Gibney. Justin is co-founder of the AND Campaign, an attorney, a political strategist, a host on the Church Politics podcast, and one of the co-authors of the book, Compassion and Conviction. Justin, thanks for joining us today.
Kyle and Rebecca, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Yeah, we're glad to have you. Hey, just to kind of maybe get the listeners up to speed, would you be willing to share a little bit about the AND campaign? What led you to found the AND campaign? What it is, what it's about? Because I think that's a huge part, at least it's a huge part of how I've engaged with your material. Mm-hmm. And one of the big reasons why I thought when we were thinking through this episode in particular, I thought we got to see if Justin can join us. So could you just share what is the AND campaign? What led you to start it? I would love our listeners to hear that story a little bit.
Sure. So the AND campaign is a Christian civic organization that's trying to raise civic literacy. And we're trying to get Christians to view politics differently, not primarily as from a partisan point of view or from an ideological point of view, but based on biblical principles. Mm. As you said earlier, I'm an attorney and political strategist. And so I have been running campaigns. I'm in Atlanta, Georgia. I've been running campaigns here for over a decade. And in doing that and, you know, kind of my faith growing, it just became hard to reconcile some of the things that I saw. So I'm in a very progressive space. Mm-hmm. And for a long time, there are a lot of Christians who either I was running their campaign or they're just friends who I knew in politics. And when they went into politics, it was almost this assumption that you would have to get rid of some of your Christian convictions. Mm-hmm. Like, if I'm going into politics, these convictions have to stay out. And I never was really comfortable with that. And really just wanted to figure out why that was happening. And partially, it was because in these spaces, there just wasn't a lot of organization outside of what was partisan. During that same time, though, I had friends who were in, you know, on the Republican side of politics, and they were dealing with some of the Tea Party stuff. And so you saw this kind of lack of compassion. And just praying and speaking with different pastors and things of that nature, just saw a need to get rid of what I saw as a kind of false dichotomy in the political space, where if you cared about social justice, you went to the left and you got rid of some of your convictions. If you cared about moral order, you went to the right and you weren't as compassionate, in my opinion, as you should be. Mm. But that just isn't the gospel. Mm-hmm. The gospel has love and truth. It has compassion and conviction. And so wanted to help provide a better framework for Christians to engage today. Yeah. That's really what me and the other two founders were trying to do, is create a better framework for engagement and also some ways to get engaged as well. Some on-ramps.
I love that.
Justin, I moved here in 2008 from the UK. And so my first experience of America, I moved here in August, was the election season after which Barack Obama was elected. And so this was sort of like a baptism of fire into American politics and trying to get my head around all the things. And one of the things that was striking to me was divisions that felt natural and normal to my American friends were completely confusing to me. I was like, how did these different values seemingly get sort of sprinkled between these two parties? It was like, well, I agree with these folks on this and those folks on that and these folks. But everyone else around me, it seemed to be like, clearly A or B. These are the natural, this is the way that the cookie crumbles most naturally. What would you have said to my 2008 English confused self coming in and trying to navigate the fact that seemingly Christian values were almost sort of evenly distributed between these two options that people, and you had to compromise one way or the other?
Yeah, I would have told you that you're not crazy. That you should hold on to your, the feeling that something was wrong here. because unfortunately we have gone into a place where we think it is natural. You know, the values that we say go along with conservatism or with progressivism, we think that is a natural separation there, and there's nothing natural about it. It gets so bad to where if you don't choose one of those sides and see them as clearly better on almost every issue, then you don't have a legitimate point of view.
Right.
Then either you're naive or you're hiding something. And I think it's unfortunate because, again, I do see it as a false dichotomy. I think it puts us into a lot of – because one of the things that I always say is that you can always ask somebody a question with two wrong answers. And I think a lot of times in politics, that's what we get pulled into. We get this question and you have two wrong answers that you have to choose from. But I think Christians sometimes, much like Jesus did, have to reframe the question. If you get a bad question, you don't have to answer it the way it was asked. Sometimes you have to reframe it to actually get to the truth. And that's what we should be trying to do.
Well, on that note, that's actually a great note. A great segue here. Let me ask you a bad question. And
Kyle's great at bad questions.
Yeah, let me ask you. It's an intentionally poorly written question. Rephrase it for me and help me understand why this conversation sometimes feels like we are stuck in the mud, missing one another on both sides of whatever the conversation is. Indisputably, in the last 10 years, 12 years, there has been a growing conversation in regards to issues of injustice, race, culture, ethnic differentiation. And while that is not a new conversation in our national history, certainly not, it's gained national prominence. You even think about the last 5 or 6 years of just – and obviously the internet, like it is for everything, has been a megaphone for these conversations. It's democratized these conversations. But let's just start big picture talking to the people that we emerge from, Christians. Don't Christians just oppose cultural and ethnic diversity? Isn't the record just so broken that at this point we're like, ah, it's so bad, it can't be fixed? Are we just stuck into this interminable, unreconcilable problem that's both endemic to our culture and which we're complicit in? Like, are we just stuck here?
So it seems like there are a few bad questions there, but I'll talk.
Well, hey, let me tell you something. You can ask my wife that the truth is I'm prone to ask a few bad questions at any given point.
You're not alone. I do the same thing sometimes.
Even a bad lead up to it, Kyle. Well done.
Yeah, thank you. I wanted to thoroughly mess it up so that I could showcase Justin's Jesus-like ability to rephrase this bad series of bad questions. So no pressure, Justin.
So let me say this. Are there some Christians who seem to be against diversity? Yes. Is that a gospel-centered approach? Is that how they should be approaching it? No. I mean, you only have to go so far as the Great Commission, right? We're talking about going to all nations. We can go to Revelation 7, where it talks about all the different tribes surrounding the throne in worship. That's not the way that we do it. Unfortunately, there are Christians who, because they can't, I think a lot of majority Christians here in America don't know how to separate their culture from what Christianity is.
Okay.
And so in mixing that up, when they go to others, the only way that they can see them as Christian is to request or demand that they assimilate. Otherwise, something is wrong.
Right.
And so that's where we've gone wrong. Yes, that somebody could draw that conclusion. Would that be a biblical response? Absolutely not. I think I don't think you have Christianity without an appreciation of some type of diversity. That's just part of who we are, part of our commission, and part of the end game, right? Part of the eschatology.
Amen.
So let me ask another bad question. I'm just going to ask a series of them. That'll be my role in this episode.
I've got a good one to follow up.
Okay. What is it? It's
so
a good question.
First.
Okay.
Yeah,
great.
I'm saving it.
Perfect. So when we're thinking through the question of diversity, and Christian witness in the global West, we're certainly not limiting the scope of the diversity in the global West to merely ethnic and cultural differentiation. There's religious differentiation. There's ideological differentiation. What kind of diversity should the Christian community consider as a part of, like, its pursuit, right? Like, so when we're thinking about about reconciliation, or when we're thinking about moving towards one another with a gospel-based approach, are there limits on what that entails? Like, because it sounds like you're saying, hey, in this political divide that we've been in, there's kind of been one kind of route has been this more more of kind of this convictional, this is what truth is. Like, we got to make sure we draw the lines of truth. We want to make sure that we fence in truth. We don't want to lose truth. And it's like, well, yeah, that's true. We do believe there are true things, and we want to defend and uphold and articulate true things. There are also false things out there. We don't want false things as a part of our kind of beliefs and practice. And at the same time, we want to deal with people that believe differently from us, even believe what we believe to be false things, with compassion. So I guess how do we balance that in a conversation that involves so much difference in the global West, specifically for Christians? How do we balance the tension between, okay, I do want to value truth, but I also want to move with compassion towards those who I think are wrong.
Yeah, that's good. So to answer the first part of the question, I think there are no limits to diversity when it comes to ethnicity, right? So there's not a certain type of people that we wouldn't bring in, or a certain culture of people that we wouldn't reach out to and believe can come into the body, right?
Right.
I think that's important. But diversity doesn't mean a type of relativism either, right? Yep. We have to maintain truth. The gospel is still exclusive, mm-hmm. right? So we're not just saying anybody can be a part of the body of Christ no matter what they believe. Beliefs matter. And so I think that is where kind of the diversity, there's a framework that the Bible gives us for our belief. And the AND campaign has articulated that framework as one of love and truth. There are ways to go outside of that framework if you're not valuing the truth. There are ways to go outside of that framework if you're not valuing love. At that point, we're still going to preach the gospel to you, mm-hmm. but you're not necessarily within what we would call true Christianity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and building on that, Justin, how can we help people understand that there are different kinds of diversity? It seems to me part of the problem we have at the moment is that diversity when it comes to racial heritage or cultural background is sort of lumped in an undifferentiated way with diversity when it comes to our sexual lifestyle or our biological sex, actually. You know, the differences between you guys and me are equated in people's minds with the differences between, you know, you and Kyle. And with the differences between any of us and someone who's in a same-sex marriage versus somebody who's in a heterosexual marriage. Like, how do we help people to sort of disentangle these different kinds of diversity?
Yeah, I think you have to hit on what is true, right? I mean, one of the things that is important is all of us are sinful. All of us need to be transformed by the gospel. And so regardless of, you hit it on that, regardless of our ethnicity, there may be even some ideological difference that are within that framework. Because again, when you have a framework, it doesn't mean that everybody's going to be the same. Mm-hmm. It means that they fit into what the gospel has structured as the way to go. That's very different than people coming in and saying, well, if you value diversity, then you have to say that I'm right, regardless of what I think.
Right.
Otherwise, you're bigoted and you really just don't care about diversity. Mm. But there's still truth. I mean, I think we've become very much relativists. If we just say, it doesn't really matter what you believe, as long as you come here and we're together, then we're the same.
Right.
No, what you believe matters, yep. because it has a lot to do with how you treat people, who you worship. I mean, that's mainly what we're getting at. So what you believe to be true does matter a lot, as well as how you treat people, mm-hmm. because there are people who might believe the right things, but they don't necessarily have that orthopraxy. And I think when you don't have that orthopraxy, that can separate you from what we would consider to be the body in Christianity too. So those are some of the differences I would point at, but I think it comes down to truth. It comes down to how you treat other people. We want diversity, ideologically to some extent. There are extremes, and we want ethnic diversity, but there are ideas and ways of living that are outside of what I think outside out of the bounds or out of the framework of what Christianity is. And that doesn't mean that we mistreat somebody that's outside of those bounds, right?
Sure.
It just means that it just means that we think differently and we have different beliefs, which makes us different and may mean that we're not in the same, we don't have the same religion.
Yeah, and I think that's such an important distinction between disagreement and hostility. People seem to not recognize, actually, either within the church or outside, that we can truly love somebody while strongly disagreeing with them. On that note, Justin, I'm curious how you would respond to folks who say, and I'm sure you hear this more than I do, but at times when I've spoken in public about race, I'll often have people commenting and responding and saying, there is only one race, the human race. You're only bringing division by talking about, you know, quote, race as if this were a thing. Is that a helpful framework, or are there limitations to that framework?
Yeah, that sounds kind of like the colorblind framework that we see a lot of people suggest. That, hey, let's be colorblind. If we just act like these differences don't exist, then they don't. And that's, you know, that's not helpful because it doesn't put things into historical context, for one. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And if you've had hundreds and hundreds of years of certain groups in a certain race being treated a certain way, and then you say, well, race doesn't matter anymore, it doesn't erase what happened before.
Right.
And so therefore you miss actually getting to justice because you're ignoring the inequalities and injustices and other things that go along with with the oppression that's happened in history and that's still continuing. So I don't think that's helpful to pretend like there are no differences, to pretend that society could just change and the playing field be just so level that we don't even have to pay attention to those differences that were actually written into our laws not that long ago.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
That's not helpful. And I don't think that's what the Bible calls for at all. Again, we can go to Revelation 7. I don't think it calls for us to do that. I think those differences can be celebrated while at the same time understanding that there is a value to that unity.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I wonder, it does seem like within the church, and I'm using the church here, little c, you know, big sweeping church across the global West, that there are competing visions for what the best way forward is on dealing with the history of Christian complicity in rejecting, suppressing, exploiting people outside of the majority of a given culture or community, and particularly here in the life of this country, that would be in terms of relationships between white and black. And there are competing visions for like, well, how do we deal with this history? How do we move forward? And I guess, is that allowable? Is it permissible? I think, I'm sure that there are some views that would be and some that wouldn't be, but it does seem that even when the conversation begins to happen, there are some who will object to the conversation happening at all. Like basically, we shouldn't even talk about it. I would say, and I live in North Texas, the most contemporary objection I hear to this is not, I don't like what you're saying. It's like, we shouldn't even be saying it. We shouldn't, right. We shouldn't even be talking. To talk about it is to create the problem.
Yeah.
Which is,
yeah.
You know, obviously is not true.
I've only ever heard white people say that. I don't know.
Well, yes, fair enough.
Like, this was all fine until we started talking about it. I've not typically heard that out of the mouths of my brothers and sisters of color. Yeah.
That's true. I guess my question is, what do you do when you have a group of Christians who are trying to live in that tension of conviction and compassion, and they just see some of the pathway forward different from each other? So like, let's kind of table those who are maybe not good faith operators in the conversation and who are the loudest ones online, you know, and, you know, they create the most amount of stir. We shouldn't be talking about this. We shouldn't be talking about this. We shouldn't be talking about this. Let's say, what happens when you do have 10, 12, 13, 14 people, a small group in a church that is thinking about something that's happened in the life of our country historically or presently, and they're talking about what do we do moving forward, and a group of well-meaning Christians is there going, we see things, I don't see this the same way that you do. We agree that we want to value this truth. We agree that we want to move with compassion towards each other and towards our community. We just don't agree on how to do that. What do you do in that moment?
Yeah, I don't think that's avoidable. And I don't think that we should try to avoid it necessarily. I invite those different voices to the table as long as they're informed, right? Mm-hmm. And working in good faith.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So if those folks are informed, working in good faith and trying to come to a real solution, I think that's healthy. You can't really avoid people having different opinions. But what you have to do from there is try to find some common ground. So you got to bring the history to the table in an honest way. You got to bring the data to the table in an honest way. Mm-hmm. And then work in good faith. Part of that is going to be prayer. We are not going to get through this just ourselves. Yeah. So if me and you guys think that we can solve this race problem just with our minds and we're going to figure it all out, we're wrong. I think there has to be prayer.
Yeah.
You have to set the table there. And then you just have to look at the facts, look at what you have, you know, the examples and what you have in front of you from history, and work to find a better. If you make a better case, if the merits of your arguments are better or somebody else's, if we're working in good faith, we should be able to see that and get as close as we can to finding a solution, even if we don't completely agree. The idea that because of my identity, everybody else has to agree with me and I don't really even have to make a cogent case for it, that's just not how the world works. And so there's going to be people with disagree. There's going to be people with different points of view who don't agree with you. It's about coming to the table, hearing each other out. Part of that is making sure that once you get into that conversation, that someone has the sense to defuse the conversation, mm-hmm. right? I'm not coming here to prove a point. I'm going to try to affirm in what you're saying what I can. And then what I have to counter, I'm going to counter in a way that's not tearing you down, but saying, I think we can do better. Mm. Here's another way to look at it.
Ever since Jesus's female followers were the first to witness his resurrection, women have been sharing the message of Jesus with those who have never heard it. In his new book, 10 Women Who Changed the World, seminary president Daniel L. Akin tells the stories of 10 women in particular who were called by God to serve as missionaries all across the world. As I've studied missions and read missionary biographies over my lifetime, Akin writes, I've been amazed and inspired by the large number of women who left home, families, comfort and safety in obedience to Jesus and his command to go to the nations with his gospel. Their number is far greater than most realize. You can find out about a handful of these stories in 10 Women Who Changed the World, which is available wherever books are sold. How do we navigate that world, Justin, in light of the reality that we'll come to the table with very different feelings about the table? Some of us, I know from talking with Black brothers and sisters here, often just a sense of real weariness and a lot of history of trying to move toward white brothers and sisters in these conversations and have fruitful interactions and finding themselves not well received. How can you help us to think, especially those of us who, you know, like me and Kyle, come to this from the perspective of white evangelical experience ourselves? Like, how can we be more attentive to that reality that people may just come to the table with different levels of vulnerability and weariness and just, history in these questions?
Yeah, a lot of brothers and sisters are drained. Mm. They've had these conversations over and over again. They've made what seemed like progress only to go completely backward. They've spoken up on things and lost their job or lost friends or lost positions. So I'm glad you asked this question because that's a reality of what we're going through.
Mm.
And sometimes people get to a point where it's hard to go on. It's hard to have that next conversation. The best thing people outside, people who haven't gone through that can do is show that your commitment to what's going on. Mm. Because one of the worst things that happens is a lot of times majority Christians come into these conversations with most of the resources and they're ready. And when something goes wrong, they just take their ball and go home.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so you worked all this and then there's a disagreement and then you use your greater resources or whatever to just end the conversation.
Mm.
I think you first have to go in listening.
Yeah.
Number one, and then showing your commitment to stay in the conversation, even if it doesn't go your way.
Mm.
Not only stay within the conversation, but your willingness to put capital, social capital, political capital, and so on into this conversation. If you bring a lot of, for a lot of people, you come talking about race or reconciliation, they're just like, yeah, whatever.
Mm.
Right? Because all that is coming together and singing Kumbaya.
Right.
But are you willing to sacrifice anything to make this happen?
Mm, mm.
And if there's no sacrifice of those types of capital that I just talked about, if there's no sacrifice in you being willing to stand up for someone against other folks who may have a similar perspective as you, then it's just not going to go very far. And so I think the time has come where we have to say, hey, the kumbaya sessions are cute. There's a place for that. But we need real tangible sacrifices coming from majority Christians. And that needs to be clear up front as we work towards the solutions. Mm. And I think that's really a good place to start. But it has to, you have to start with listening and hearing what people have been through and where they're coming from.
Yeah, yeah.
Justin, I wanted to ask you, in an earlier episode this season, we talked a little bit about deconstruction. You know, the goal of this podcast is hard questions faithfully explored. And certainly in the last few years, deconstruction, ex-evangelicalism, you know, goes by a lot of different things. There's kind of been this sense of we should really start to deeply consider maybe parts, barnacles on the boat, so to speak, things that have attached themselves to the Christian faith or expressions of the Christian faith that are not congruent with Scripture and are not conducive to healthy following of Jesus Christ. We talked in that episode about some of the tensions between like a healthy approach to deconstruction and an unhealthy approach. The reason I bring this up is if I did an online poll of how significant Christian complicity in the history of racism in this country is for the motivation around deconstruction, it would poll very highly.
Yep.
And I think it would poll very highly not just among people of color. I think it would poll very highly among mm-hmm. young white Christians who were raised in largely evangelical environments. And it makes me I find that incredibly curious. I'm not surprised at all that that's the case. I wonder, do you have a take on, like, if somebody came to you, well, let's say they're a white evangelical Christian, a young 24-year-old, came right out of Bible college, and they're saying, Justin, I've got to leave the church. Do you know how complicit Christians have been in the history of racism in this country? I mean, like, they're saying like, hey, this has driven me away from following Jesus and being a part of the church. How would you respond to that person? How would you help them think through that question as a Christian, a leader of color who has really given your adult life and career to not like running away from this problem, but like running right towards it? How would you talk with somebody that's listening to this podcast going, I don't think I should stay in the church given its bad, bad record in the life of this country? I think I got to walk away from this entirely.
Yeah, I would say that's a mistake. You know, I understand where people are coming from, but you don't want to center your understanding of Christianity around people who have gotten it wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You know, what I tell people is when you talk about orthodoxy and orthopraxy, to walk away from the faith because of you're basically walking away from the faith because of people who didn't do the faith right.
Right.
So because they didn't have the orthopraxy, but because their orthodoxy might have been a little bit off too, right?
Right.
Based on how they were acting, why would you leave the faith and center the people that were doing the faith wrong?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I think it goes back to that question of can you distinguish the culture from the faith, the kind of the more pure faith?
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of folks who are doing deconstruction, yes, absolutely. We should be examining and re-examining and dismantling the culture. But you need to understand that the culture, white evangelical culture, whatever other culture you may come out of, is not the same as the faith. And I can show you 10 other examples of the faith that looks very much different mm-hmm. than that. But you've got to be able to distinguish those two. And you see that mistake being made in both sides of that conversation. I'm leaving the faith because this is what Christianity is. No, that's not what Christianity is. That's what that culture is.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I was just going to say, just pursuing that line of thought, Justin, I think there's a perception in many people's minds, white evangelical folk, whether they're wanting to really stay in the church or whether they're wanting to leave, there's a perception that those other examples of faith, and you know, one clear example of this would be the history of the Black church in America and the present reality of the Black church in America is looks very different when it comes to some of the most important moral issues. Is that perception true, or is that, would you say that's misleading? Help people to understand that. I think we often hear from in public from Black Christian leaders who maybe have more progressive takes on a lot of questions, because honestly, that's what both white evangelical conservatives and white liberal folk find most comfortable to hear from. Like, that's, I guess that's my hypothesis. But tell me how you would respond to somebody who said that.
Yeah, I tell them to read Esau Macaulay's book, because there is this idea that orthodoxy is a white thing, and then there's some on this. There's white people who believe that, and then there's some Black people, mostly from academic and, you know, kind of elite spaces, that would say that. But that is just ahistorical.
Yep.
Right. If you look at the primary, what Esau Macaulay called Black ecclesial tradition, it was an orthodox tradition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So orthodoxy was not something that, you know, white evangelicals had a monopoly on. That's just not the case. But again, you get this idea because you can even go back as far as some of the Western conquests. There's always this idea that true intellect, true civilization only comes from the West.
Mm-hmm.
And you see that even in the church now, where true theology, what Christianity really is, only comes from these white majority spaces.
Mm-hmm.
Everything else is just trying to get there. Maybe we can help them get there. So whether I like it and accept it or whether I reject it, that is the norm.
Right.
And so what I want to tell the people who are deconstructing or see orthodoxy as only white, you're using the framework of the people who hurt you or the people who you saw doing it wrong, rather than really reading a little more, expanding your view and expanding your understanding and seeing orthodoxy. I would tell you to go read a bunch of the sermons of someone like Gardner C. Taylor, right? Read about Frederick Douglass, right? These were people who had very serious critiques of America, of American Christianity, and yet very orthodox beliefs.
Yeah.
So expand your reading of history, expand your reading of Christians, because again, I think we're framing our understanding of Christianity around a very flawed version of Christianity.
Yeah.
And there's some better examples, although none of them are perfect. There are some better examples that are accessible to us.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think one of the ways that this seems to be reinforced in people's minds, and I think very unhelpfully and unfairly, is because the large majority of Black Americans, including many Black Christians, would vote Democrat and would therefore be sort of tethered in various ways to some progressive views that they may not even actually share in a lot of people's minds. That sort of evidence that the Black Church is at heart progressive in the anti-scriptural senses. I know that there are some ways that we can use that word progressive actually to mean something very positive, sort of theologically. So help us understand why that is and how we can kind of not fall for that misleading characterization of our Black brothers and sisters of faith.
So the Black church is not a monolith.
Mm-hmm.
There are certainly churches that are very orthodox. And I come from, my family comes from a denomination that's an orthodox denomination. And so when it comes to the Christian sexual ethic, when it comes to the sanctity of life, we would be right there with them. But then there are progressive parts of the Black church. And it just so happens that the mainstream media seems to have an interest in highlighting mm-hmm. those folks.
Yep.
It just so happens that a lot of the folks that are in the more progressive side of it are in academia,
yep.
are in, you know, leadership spaces where they're going to have more of a say. They're going to be highlighted more so as academics than some of the other folks that I know who are Black, who are come from a Black tradition and are very much orthodox.
Yeah.
That's just how it is. That's part of what one of the things that the AND campaign is trying to kind of fix that misperception, because I think it is very harmful. Mm-hmm. Anytime that you think orthodoxy belongs to one group
mm-hmm.
or especially belongs to a group who has got so many other things wrong, who has abused power in so many ways, it does have a negative impact on how people perceive the religion. But again, it is a misperception. It doesn't have, I mean, if you look at history, it can't be defended through history. And I think we just need to do a better job of getting that information out there
because
there's so many different sermons, so many different writers and believers throughout history who can correct that if we just expose people to their point of view.
Yeah. Yeah. It's fascinating to me on that note that if you actually look at survey data on who is most likely to uphold marriage between one man and one woman versus a embracing gay marriage, Black Americans are actually much less likely to affirm gay marriage than white Americans on average. And people, I think those who have a very undifferentiated sort of simplistic view of diversity, you know, diversity equals good equals progressive ideals equals equals right. equals, mm-hmm. haven't actually recognized the ways in which it seems to me a lot of Black Americans are almost sort of co-opted into larger systems that, right. that may not represent them in a number of ways because they're representing them in other ways.
Yeah. And I don't want to dodge your partisan point because I do think there's a conversation that needs to be addressed about a lot of African Americans being Democrats, a lot of African American Christians being Democrats. And there's history behind that too, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, you have a situation where conservatives, a lot of Christian conservatives, did not support civil rights at all. Mm-hmm. In fact, you have a lot of situations where some white evangelicals have given nothing when it comes to civil rights and when it comes to racial justice, unless they were forced to.
Right.
And so therefore, and you could even look at voter rights. Mm. Why would I want to be in a party with people who seem not to want me to take part in the process? Mm. This is not, you know, this isn't rocket science to me. I think it's fairly simple. What that doesn't mean, though, is that I agree with everything that's going on the left.
Right.
Or I agree with everything that's going on in Democratic politics. That's not what that means. Although I will say myself, I do think it's unfortunate that some of our leaders in those spaces don't reflect our values.
Right.
In those. So that's an issue that I think internally we have to deal with. And that, again, the AND campaign is working on dealing with, where you do have a lot of Christians who may be Black Christians who may be Democrats who are more socially conservative.
Yeah.
However, when so-and-so gets in office, they don't represent that point of view at
yeah.
all.
Yeah.
That's a problem. Some of that has to do with money.
Yeah.
Some of that has to do with the resources and who gets propped up and what you have to do and accept to get propped up. But it's a conversation that needs to be had. And I think that misconception doesn't come out of nowhere.
Yeah.
There's something to that, but it needs to be addressed.
Yeah.
I'd love to land here. Justin, you've been active on the ground for a long time doing this and against incredible headwinds, not just culturally, but also from Christian communities in the country that you're trying to do it in, with large scale confusion as a threshold, and sometimes blatant opposition as the norm. What continues to compel you to not just throw up your hands and say, you know what? Like, you know, I'm going to wash my hands of this. You guys, good luck. You know, I hope you figure it out. Like, what continues to compel you to move forward and to try to mobilize people to not live an either or reality in an area where scripture gives us a both and paradigm? What compels you to continue to do that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm the progeny of the civil rights generation. I've been blessed to talk to them and hear what motivated them, and so that's always motivated me.
Mm.
They've gone through way more than I've gone through. You know, somebody can talk bad about me on Twitter or whatever. That happens. You know, like we say, don't get in the game if you don't want to get hit. That's just part of that's the nature of how things work. But that generation, to know their stories, to see what they had gone through. You know, that's my grandparents' generation. It just motivates me to keep going because I know that they went through so much more. And I just think that's my calling. Like, it's okay for people to get to be weary. It's okay to kind of be like, I can't do this right now. Sometimes we have to do that. But there also has to be people that say, I don't have a choice.
Yeah.
Right. I got to do this. I can't make it about me. I can't make it about my feelings. That doesn't mean it's always easy. But that's kind of what motivates me, along with just a really strong community of friends from, you know, Dr. Charlie Dates, the Lisa Fields from Jude 3 Project, Esau McCauley, all those folks who we really just support each other and work together. Mm. And so I think that community side of it is important, too.
Justin, thank you for making time to join us today.
Thanks,
really,
brother.
I'm grateful for it.
Thanks for having me. I enjoyed it.
Listen, I strongly encourage you, if you have not heard of the AND campaign, you have heard of it now, and you should absolutely check it out. Google the AND campaign and check it out. Also, check out Church Politics Podcast or the book that Justin co-authored, Compassion and Conviction. If you're looking for Confronting Christianity, you can find us on Instagram and Twitter. You can leave a review on iTunes. And in your review, include a question that you want us to explore in a future episode. We'll take those into consideration. We hope you enjoyed the discussion. Grace and peace.